Hello and welcome to London by Guide. My name's Isabel. I'm an award-winning London Blue Badge guide, and during lockdown I'm turning my hand to a little bit of podcasting. Next weekend I was supposed to be doing a walk, a public walk around Kennington, and during lockdown a lot of my constitutionals have been taken in Kennington Park, which is very close to where I live. So I decided this morning that that is what I'm going to talk about. So obviously it's just one part of the normal walk that I do in and around Kennington. If you hear any jingly noises or the odd meow, that will be my cat Bosun, who's quite keen to be part of these recordings. One of the great advantages of living in or near Kennington is Kennington Park. It was Kennington Common until 1852, and it covers an area of 15 acres. In 1893, the London County Council conducted a census to find out how much London's parks were used. 40,000 people visited Kennington Park on that day. It was one of the most extensively visited. Then, as now, there are opportunities for sport, leisure and simple relaxation. During lockdown, many of these are closed, but they will reopen in time. You can, however, still follow the nature trail. And again, in the future, you'll be able to play football, tennis, netball, baseball or skateboard. And in the summer, there are open-air hula hooping classes. There used to be an open-air swimming pool, which closed in 1988, and a bandstand. Now there are new courts. And the old netball court has been a skateboard area since 1978. There's also an old-fashioned English flower garden and a cafe, housed in a building that's a rare survival of the arts and crafts refreshment houses. Kennington Park's a great place to hang out, to watch the dogs playing, to enjoy an ice cream, or just sit and read a book or watch the world go by. It's home to a cricket club too, the Kennington United Cricket Club, who have several teams playing in different leagues and tournaments. That's appropriate, of course, because although Kennington is known as the home of Surrey County Cricket's ground, beg your pardon, at the Oval, Kennington Common has a longer association with the game. The first recorded match was played here in 1724. However, not everything has always been perfect in Kennington. There's a memorial at the north end of the park to those members of the armed services from the area who lost their lives in two world wars. And further down, there's another poignant memorial to people who died in the park in the Second World War. This memorial remembers people who died in Kennington Park on the 15th of October 1940, and some of their bodies still remain under the ground. It's a memorial made from Caithness stone, which comes from Scotland, and it's by local artist Richard Kindersley. There's an inscription from Maya Angelou. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again. The people were sheltering in a communal air raid when the shelter was hit by a 50-pound bomb. Around 100 people died. The exact figure is not known. It was the largest single loss of life at a bomb incident in Lambeth. During the Blitz of 1940 to 41, some 120,000 tonnes of high explosive fell on London, with around 30,000 people killed. Many more were injured and lost their homes and all their possessions. Some 4% of Londoners took to sleeping in underground stations. Others built shelters in their gardens. But in this part of London and in others, many homes did not have gardens, so communal shelters were built. This one was built in 1938 on a grid design, two long trenches linked with shorter trenches like the rungs of a ladder. Each trench was lined with concrete and roofed with corrugated iron with a layer of soil on the top. It wasn't a good design, because a direct hit on one part could cause the rest to collapse. But it's the same design used in various parts of London, including Clapham. In the First World War, trenches were zigzag shaped to help them better withstand a direct hit. And this design was also adopted for the bomb shelters in and around the country from 1939. On the 15th of October 1940, the trenches at the southern end of the shelter were hit at around 8 in the evening. They collapsed. Despite the best efforts of emergency services and volunteers, including a 17-year-old boy, only 48 bodies were recovered. Eventually, they could do no more, and they covered the remains with lime. The bad weather made further work dangerous. The next month, the damaged trench was filled in, but the rest continued in use and were only demolished in 1947. Near this memorial is Prince Consort Lodge. It's named after Prince Albert, the husband and consort of Victoria. It's a model dwelling for the working classes. It's four dwellings, two up and two down, each equipped with a sitting room, three bedrooms, an inside lavatory, a scullery fitted with a dust chute, a meat safe, which was a ventilated cupboard for keeping meat safe from pests, a sink, a coal bin, and a plate rack. Inside the sitting room, an airing cupboard was heated by air from the fireplace. It was made of hollow bricks and said to be warm, dry, soundproof, long-lasting, and cheap. The design is often wrongly ascribed to Albert, but it was actually a man called Henry Roberts, a pioneer in model housing. And it had been at the Great Exhibition in Kensington Gardens in 1851. And it was the Society for the Improvement of the Conditioning of the Labouring Classes who exhibited it there. Albert was their president. The total cost of the building was less than £500. It was moved here in 1852 to house two park attendants and a museum for articles related to cottage economy. Cottage economy was basically self-sufficiency and covered everything from keeping bees to keeping pigs, baking bread to brewing beer. It was popularised by a book of the same name by William Cobbett, which was published in 1821 and still in print. Nowadays, Trees for Cities occupies the building. Trees for Cities started in 1993 as Trees for London, when a group of young Londoners recognised the need for more trees in the capital. And the idea was to establish a charity that would be highly practical and would work with local communities to get more trees planted and green those areas most in need of greening. The charity's mission is to increase people's awareness of trees, not only as things that make our built environments pleasanter to look at, but also how they are useful to us in different ways, from providing shade to raising the value of our houses and providing habitats for wildlife. At first, money was raised through fundraising club nights as young Londoners danced through the night to raise funds for tree planting. In 2003, on its 10th anniversary, the name was changed to Trees for Cities, largely in response to requests for support and advice from cities around the world. In addition to tree planting, the charity works with schools and community groups and offers vocational training in arboriculture and horticulture. Beekeeping continues in Kennington Park. Across the park from Trees for Cities and more or less behind the tea house is Bee Urban, described on their website as a honey-centric social enterprise. If you're lucky when you visit the park, Bee Urban will be open and you'll be able to meet Barnaby Shaw, the director, and his team, stroll among the hives and enjoy the plants. Bee Urban not only keeps bees and offers training for would-be beekeepers, it also runs community projects. It's an oasis within an oasis, which is Kennington Park. To reach what would have been the southern tip of Kennington Common, you have to cross Camberwell New Road, which opened in 1816. Camberwell New Road originally was a toll road, privately administered by local enterprise and regulated by government. A barrier would have barred the way to travellers until they had paid a fee or toll in order to travel along it. St Mark's Church now stands on this land. It was built in 1824, a Waterloo church. Badly bombed in the Second World War, it reopened in 1960, but the interior galleries were closed in to provide office and community space, so it's a lot darker inside than it would have been originally. On a Saturday morning, if you visit this part, you'll find there's a thriving farmers market. This is in great contrast with the use of the land pre-church, because it was a site of Surrey Gallows, a place where there were public executions until 1800. The most famous of these executions were the Scottish Jacobite rebels after their cause had failed, and they were put to death here after their trial in 1746. They were hanged, then when dead, they were decapitated, disemboweled, hacked into pieces to be sent as a warning around the country. Their heads were displayed on Temple Bar, the entrance to the city on Fleet Street, which was removed in 1877 to Theobald's Park in Hertfordshire to ease traffic congestion. You can now find it next to St Paul's Cathedral. The fiancée of one of the rebels died from shock on the spot when she witnessed his execution. In 1848, it was also the assembly point for supporters of the Chartist movement, who intended to march on the Palace of Westminster from Kennington to present a large petition to Parliament. It's not clear quite how many people assembled at Kennington Park for this, to present this petition, because reports of numbers vary between 20,000 and 200,000. They had marched from various points around London, from Stepney Green, Clerkenwell Green, Peckham Fields and Russell Square. And the numbers of people marching were so great, it took an hour for them to cross Blackfriars Bridge. They were led by an outspoken lawyer, Fergus O'Connor, and a quiet Cornishman, William Lovett, a cabinet maker. And they were protesting and asking for political reform. Their demands included giving all men over the age of 21 the vote, equal electoral districts, no property qualification for members of Parliament, annual parliaments, and vote by ballot. They planned to march on Parliament en masse and deliver the petition. It was hardly radical by today's standards, but to a society still reeling from the effects of 1789 in France, this was the herald of revolution, society being turned on its head, and the authorities reacted accordingly. The 80-year-old Duke of Wellington, the hero of the Battle of Waterloo of 1815, was Prime Minister. In addition to existing forces, he recruited around 120,000 special constables. Victoria was dispatched to the safety of the Isle of Wight. Troops took up positions, out of sight, but ready to defend the bridges and to watch the road from Kennington to Westminster. When he arrived at Kennington, O'Connor was taken across the road to the Horns Tavern, where police warned him of the consequences if the planned procession to the Palace of Westminster took place. Realising the risk to protesters, O'Connor addressed them, asking them to disperse, and saying the petition would be delivered by two delegates travelling to the Palace of Westminster by coach. The crowd did as asked, and by 2 PM there was no sign of anything in the common to show that there had ever been a rally. Although they didn't see their demands enacted in the short term, by 1928, all demands save the one for annual parliaments were on the statute book. Things changed for Kennington Common too. As a result of the demonstration, the authorities decided to enclose it to reduce the threat of a large crowd using it as a meeting place, so close to the Palace of Westminster ever again. So in 1852, Kennington Common became South London's earliest park. Prince Consort Lodge was brought here to be the gatehouse, instead of its original destination of Primrose Hill, providing a solid reminder that no less a personage than the Prince Consort was taking an active interest in improving the lot of the working classes. Thank you very much for listening. It's Easter Sunday today, so happy Easter to all of you, and please stay well.